Welcome to CyberFix, your dopamine-infused tech news update. My name is Gabriel, here to provide entertaining and insightful analysis of recent developments in cyberspace. I like to opine on the finer points of ongoing trends without taking myself too seriously. Stay tuned for a lighthearted exploration of hostile cyberspace and what we can do about it. This episode is being recorded on June 23rd, 2024, and we'll be discussing data and government, location data woes, email authentication, and the AI nonsense extravaganza. Then after the break, we will be discussing Mozilla blunders, alt tech developments, and many stories from the Cyber War Dispatch. Starting up first, we have the Open Rights Groups, with their piece titled, No Data Protection, No Democracy. To me, this piece is really just the tip of a very ugly and weird iceberg, where we've kind of opened a can of worms in modern democratic systems, or democratic-like systems, where information about people can be used for political purposes. Naturally, the go-to citation is the Cambridge Analytica debacle. Truthfully, this is probably one of many scandals to be, and we only have a small idea of how real the extent of the real problem is. What I like about this piece is that it's actually quite blunt about the problems related with mass surveillance and data collection for government or corporate use. The truth is, the more we consolidate information on everyone, the more valuable that becomes for all kinds of different entities. Many people won't trust a politician on the campaign trail as far as they'll throw them, and this is a really good example of how much data of our own data do we really want to put in their hands. When it comes to data that we have no choice not to collect one way or another, healthcare information is super important. We Live Security has an article titled, My Health Information has been stolen. Now what? Tragically, for us non-Americans, the top suggestion they list is change healthcare, because if one healthcare provider has a data breach, maybe another one will have better security practices. For those of us under single-payer systems, yes, as a Canadian, I may be able to switch to a different province, but I'm sure in other countries, federal healthcare systems, I believe the UK has the NHS. When it comes to medical data, is that medical information is broader than just what is, you know, collected about you at a hospital, tests. It also includes a lot of information they have to have about you, such as your policy numbers, your social security number, and potentially online accounts that are related to your interactions with the system. One of the tips they put here that I think is really important is number two, they put out, find out exactly what happened. It's highly concerning during a data breach when the institution or company or whatever it is very tight-lipped about what happened. Usually they'll use vague terminology, they'll downplay the extent of it, and that can very often put people at risk to not make the proper preparations if they don't understand the true extent of what happened. Unfortunately, these days, it is best and prudent that when a data breach happens in relation to something you use, it's probably best to assume that everything that site, service, government, institution, whatever, had access to is now for sale on the dark web or otherwise being used for malicious purposes. Another thing they recommend is considering legal action. I don't think it is out of the question that when institutions use the force of law to force people to hand information over or to being forced to divulge information, I think it's unjustifiable to go after them for that data being stolen or misused. Truthfully, I think the solution to many of our problems is making private sensitive information a liability rather than an asset. The New Oil has a blog post titled A Rising Enforcement of Censorship. What's fascinating about this post is this is about SMS censorship, i.e. text messages between mobile phones. I was not aware of to what degree there was censorship on SMS messages in the United States, but they actually quote another blog post with a quite telling quote. SMS in the United States is governed by strict rules and regulation around prohibited or limited content. The Wireless Industry Trade Association, CTIA, monitors and enforces these rules, and mobile carriers must comply with them. One of those rules covers content within the category known as SHAFT, sex, hate, alcohol, firearms, and tobacco. Within the hate category, sits profanity or swear words. In my words, it sounds like our free speech is being shafted in the SMS system. This is important to understand because, like many other digital systems, the operators really have to all work together to provide what is commonly known as net neutrality. Digital systems will forward information regardless of its content so that things just work. With things facing individuals, it's very easy for them to just say, sorry, that's just you, that's your problem. And I think it's very important to keep in mind that if you rely on uncensored communications or want to protect your information sent over those channels, end-to-end encryption is effectively non-negotiable. Personally, I think you should use whatever encrypted messenger you and those you are able to be in contact with are comfortable with. A good option is Delta Chat. It's relatively frictionless with a little bit of difficulty to start up, but I do really like what Delta Chat does, though there are many other excellent options as well. Oddly enough, the Washington Post is reporting, police love Google surveillance data. Here's how to protect yourself. Truthfully, I'm a little pessimistic on what individuals can do to truly restrict what location data is collected on them, especially if they are using Google and Apple devices, or really any smartphone with a SIM card is just as vulnerable in many ways. Real-time location data is a very valuable data set to have on populations, especially when a government or even corporations and even criminal entities are trying to do mass population operations, whether it's psychological, whether it's economic, whether it's even social. I do think there is a full range of activities that are outside of the spectrum of what most people consider normal day-to-day operations. I would highly encourage people to think seriously about real-time location data on an entire population means for the power of an institution. I wholeheartedly recommend that we all start moving towards digital systems and devices that are not so invasively collecting the information. I have no faith that Google or any other large institution can be trusted with such a treasure trove of intimate and useful information that can be weaponized against all kinds of people. There are many options. You can carry your phone in a Faraday bag. You cannot have a cell phone at all as you go places. But ultimately, the best long-term strategy involves weaning yourself away from digital systems that are expressly built for surveilling you and switch to tools that empower you, such as free and open source software and hardware. Speaking of total domination, there is a post here, cryptographers' feedback on the EU identity wallet. It's always very nice to see those who really know their stuff push back against various initiatives that may on the surface seem well-meaning, but ultimately have disastrous consequences. The EID has come out of the eIDAS regulations in the EU that is providing them for a digital wallet that can be used for all kinds of purposes. What I like about this post is not only do they have an excellent wide variety of other information on this website about the issue, they explicitly point out that there are mechanisms to implement these digital ID systems to provide authentication without handing off so much information. It seems like governments really want to grab everything they can because they really only have one chance at this. They have one chance to introduce a digital ID system, and it will be very hard to use political capital to change it without a major impetus behind it. So what seems to be the play right here is they want to grab as much information as possible and make people identify as much as they can without the proper data protections in place. This digital ID push is global, and it is highly concerning how that data can be used. It's clear we only know the tip of the iceberg, but there's another very fascinating point this post makes that might be a good reason for them to hold off on actually implementing any digital ID system. Apparently, there are no practical anonymous credential schemes that are plausibly post-quantum secure. What this means is that hash and signature-based mechanisms that will probably underpin digital ID across the board may not actually have quantum computing protections. Now, some people are convinced quantum computing is complete snake oil and that it will never be a real threat to encryption, but truthfully, it's only a matter of time before sophisticated counter-encryption techniques evolve to the point that maybe post-quantum might actually be a red herring for another problem across the board. The point of all this is that properly, ethically, and responsibly implementing a digital ID system is a way higher bar than most of the governments currently toying around with the concept will truthfully admit. It is always telling that as the government say, trust us, we have the experts, we know what they're doing. You will always find experts like these who actually know their stuff, raising the alarms of a couple of issues that tend to come to pass shortly after the government gets its way. On a lighter note, not everything the EU does is wholly nefarious. The NLNet Foundation is a non-profit that is in large part supported by the European Commission to fund many open source hardware and software initiatives. Truthfully, I really like their funding announcements because it's a useful way of discovering new open source projects that you may not otherwise be aware of. There are a couple of notable projects they have supported in this round that I think is worth drawing your attention to. One is Unified Push. People may not know this, but your push notifications that you get on either an Android or an iOS device actually are a vector for surveillance. It recently came out that Google and Apple were handing over notification data to government. So that meant no matter how sexy your end-to-end encrypted app was, if it was not hiding the notification information or otherwise circumventing the main notification systems, that information was being relayed in real time. Another fascinating one from all these grants was the Open hardware webcam. Many people have rightfully had the concern that when their webcam is plugged in or even built into the device, that it may be secretly taking pictures or recording either photographs, videos, or even just audio. Having an open hardware verifiable webcam would be a very useful way of knowing for sure. What I find fascinating as somebody who's been watching this space is I think many of these advancements are going to be used by governments to make themselves secure, but it really feels like the education is not catching up and most regular people may actually be left in the dust as governments actually build themselves secure infrastructure, which is a big part of the reason why the Libra Solutions Network, my initiative that this show supports, is really all about trying to get individuals up to speed to at least understand the changes that are going on and why various moves are taking place right now. I think it is crucial now more than ever to pay close attention to what's going on in the tech space, especially as governments become more tyrannical. Driving along ahead, Ars Technica has an article that one of the major sellers of detailed driver behavioral data is shutting down. There was a recent report that came out where the data that was collected by various cars from various brands was investigated, and it came out that most of your cars are basically spyware. So most people, when they think of a device that's tracking you wherever you go, they say, oh, it's the smartphone. Of course, it's the smartphone that you carry with you everywhere. Oddly enough, cars are just as much, if not more so, a vector for surveillance because there is detailed information about the driver's behavior, which is then sold to either car insurance companies or other similar outfits. And what I really think is important to take away from this particular story is that surveillance is not just necessarily about your messages being read or even what actions you take and what you're actually doing. What's fascinating and terrifying is that the more surveillance creeps into our lives, the more granular, precise, and seemingly innocuous serious invasions can become. Because although AI and machine learning can kind of become its own hype, the truth is you can detect patterns from very innocuous data sets that may reveal far more than one would even imagine. No matter whether it's digital IDs, whether it's the chips in your cars, or the software you use, it is very crucial to be very aware of what information is being collected about you and what protections you can actually take to either mitigate or avoid it. According to our baseless speculation, 1 in 10 people will experience catastrophic data loss this year. Many people right now are completely unaware that they have data without backups that is going to be lost to entropy forever. Data loss can cause devastating experiences, including, but not limited to, losing access to photos and videos of precious memories, being locked out of accounts that needed two-factor authentication, which can leave you having to reorganize your entire digital life. Sleepless nights searching for backups that were not done beforehand. Ask yourself if regular backups are right for you. But hey, look on the bright side. If you do lose it all, think of everything that's no longer bothering you. Now you'll never have to have your day decided by emails or social media notifications ever again. You've escaped the technological terror and crawled out of the parasocial hell that is the modern digital landscape. You're now free to choose your own destiny. How will you live in your new carefree life? Are you too busy for digital nihilism? Eventually, we all come crawling back to digital systems. Hopefully, you don't have to start all over again. The most important thing is to follow the famous 3-2-1 rule. 3 copies in 2 places, one of them being entirely offline. Visit gabe.rocks/backups to learn more. Speaking of location data, when this data is collected, very often institutions and governments will say, we are using the utmost security. We are doing everything we can. There is no way anything can go wrong. Trust us, please. Unfortunately, anyone paying a little bit of attention to this space knows that that is simply no guarantee at all. HackRead reports location tracker firm Tile hit by data breach. Hackers access internal tools. So this Bluetooth location tracker was run by a system that itself got hacked. People who have administrator access or super user access to really everything the company knew about all the trackers in existence now had basically insight into everything that's going on. This is something that is highly concerning with any centralized attempt to build anything like this, is that it just becomes a massive target. What I find fascinating about these incidents is that companies will always lecture either their users or the public, oh, well, you just got to take security seriously, you know, make sure you have secure passwords and you reset, you know, your multi-factor authentication or whatever it is. But when the company's own systems are breached in this case, but there are many other similar cases, it's usually because they gained access to something the company did not foresee being publicly accessible. There have been many data breaches where a hacker or a group of hackers broke into a company or institution systems and have basically full view into everything. What's terrifying about this, whether it's a location tracking company or anything out there, is that in that scenario, it is so hard to actually know the full extent of what was done. Again, location data, especially mass, real-time, precise location data, is a treasure trove of information that we all need to think more about how we want to stop it from getting into the wrong hands, whether we want it to be in anyone's hands at all. Taking down the stakes a little bit, Leaping Computer is reporting that Microsoft is changing the security authentication methods for personal Outlook accounts. If you use Outlook, you've probably already, if you use Outlook, starting September 16th, you will no longer just be able to sign in with username and password to your Outlook accounts. What this means, and instead you will have to use Microsoft's multi-factor authentication. This is something that's mostly a big deal for people who are using third-party clients for Outlook. You'll want to make sure your mail clients, such as Thunderbird or others that are out there, actually support the new authentication mechanism, because if they don't, you may be locked out of your email until you go back to Outlook directly and log in there. This move to add a multi-factor authentication to email is ultimately a good step, because for many people, because I'm sure a lot of people use Outlook or its related services, their email account is the gateway to their entire online life. I do think it is important for these services that manage important accounts are upping their security. Now, moving on to AI insanity. WeDistribute is reporting that Maven imported over 1 million Fediverse posts into their new social network that is run by former OpenAI team lead Ken Stanley. What's fascinating about this is that for those who aren't aware, the Fediverse is an interconnected social media network of various different social media sites all connecting together. What's even more fascinating is that they don't all just connect together using the same system. There is a system of bridges that allow one system to talk to another. So for instance, the Fediverse can talk to Blue Sky, which is another social networking system. And ironically, Blue Sky posts were brought in as well. This overlaps in general with the ongoing discussion about how AI companies should be allowed to use people's public information that can be easily or sometimes less easily scraped and then trained into AI models. A more pressing concern for those who are trying to operate independent Fediverse servers to participate in decentralizing the social media landscape. If all these different AI companies getting big money from big institutions are suddenly DDoS attacking by using up all the resources of these smaller services, that can really hamper the ability for independent alternatives to grow. This is a really serious concern for those of us who do want to democratize and decentralize the information landscape. So it is something worth paying attention to. Speaking of somebody who's done a deeper dive into this deep learning problem, Rob Knight on his blog posts, Perplexity AI is lying about their user agent. When any bot, whether it's a big company like Google or whether it's just somebody's hobby script, any bot that does things online will leave basically a signature saying, oh, I'm this bot. This signature saying who you are online as an online program really has the security of a signature on a postcard. Anybody can forge a signature of a different one because it's not actually validated. It's just, I want you to think I'm this, or I am declaring that I'm this. Lying about user agents does have some impacts because it's basically a tragedy of the commons type scenario. If these AI companies or other bots around the internet no longer properly identify themselves, this can create a scenario where nobody can trust any bot. Is that a good thing? Is that a bad thing? I think that's pretty much up for debate, but ideally it is best to be able to accurately identify bots so that you can let in the ones, say, you're more friendly to, whether you want people building their own search indexes, being able to do that. Lying about your user agent is generally seen as a malicious behavior. That said, despite it being relatively frowned upon, I would not expect any company or institution to put honesty in small details like that above their bottom line. I think we can expect these AI companies to do this really much as a standard moving forward. To go even further, Javi at goblin.band, another Fediverse server, has a really interesting rant that I will read for you now. The AI industry is a grift so big, it's really hard to explain it to people who are not familiar with the tech industry. Yes, Google is perfectly aware their AI-powered search is way worse than their classic mode. Yes, Apple knows their integration with ChatGPT is flaky and adds nothing useful to their product, and they don't care. Because the goal is not making their products better. The goal is to ride the hype wave so the investors are happy and their stock price keeps growing. That's almost entirely what's powering the AI industry. It's a multi-billion dollar grift. One so big and so obvious that most people think they have to be missing something. That they don't understand something that makes everything to make it make sense as a business. No, that's everything. It's pure snake oil selling. I would say that's a pretty decent entry-level take, though Nobody Special has done an excellent video on NVIDIA's round-tripping, which is where basically they will spend money to boost up a company that will then buy back from them to as a way of boosting everybody's sales. Everybody's happy. We're announcing so many deals. It's actually quite fascinating how much financial engineering can create very distorted incentives. Which, in my opinion, is what makes the AI space look more wacky than serious or useful. And if you don't believe me that the round-tripping thing is a serious problem, The Register is reporting payoff from AI projects is dismal, biz leaders complain. No wonder most orgs are slowing their spending, they write. The truth is, many of these AI products, as in online services that collect information on the people using the tools to use AI so that they can build AIs on the people using AIs, all of this is really just a house of cards, and there are not enough customers taking up the hype to really justify the absurd amount of money going into this. So many of these AI companies are coming up with, I'm going to be honest, wacky, interesting projects. But the problem is when you spend billions to start up a company that maybe makes a few million over the year, it really does cut into the idea that, oh, this is going to take over society and be the biggest thing ever. And there's infinite growth related to this. I do think AI tools can be useful. I think there's many interesting applications of machine learning, genetic algorithms, and all the sexy technology that's like the kernel of truth underneath this industry. Unfortunately, it seems like the hype is entirely divorced from the actual applications. And now we seem to have financial data basically supporting that idea. Gizmodo is reporting, AI detectors get it wrong. Writers are being fired anyway. It really drives me up the wall when people say, oh, this thing says this is generated by AI, or oh, this thing says this is not generated by AI. Whether or not people can tell whether something's AI generated or not, I do not believe that is something that is easy to automate at this stage of the game in a reliable and useful way. I do not believe we are at the stage where there is any readily available automated tool that is reliable enough to make these kinds of decisions when it comes to generated content. There are definitely signs. Most people point to the funny fingers or all kinds of other minute details. There is definitely some low-hanging fruit. I am absolutely sure you can tell with a reasonable reasonable amount of care if somebody is just doing all their work through ChatGPT. But that takes more time. I think when it comes to writers or creatives in any line of work, it is absolutely crucial to be aware that the discussion about who's using AI tools is an entirely different and complex conversation. I definitely feel for any creative who has lost their job either because of these tools or for being wrongfully suspected of using these tools. I alluded to earlier that one of my major concerns with these AI tools is that ultimately you are reliant on their infrastructure so that they can watch what you're doing and ideally learn from it. But let's be honest, I believe data harvesting is the goal. In fact, the more I think about this space, I am less convinced it is actually about the applications, but more about figuring out how they can motivate people to do everything on these walled garden lockdown systems that basically have a robot decide what you are and are not allowed to do. If that sounds crazy and outlandish, Kim.com is tweeting, OpenAI just hired the guy who is in charge of mass surveillance at the NSA. He outsourced the illegal mass spying against Americans to British agencies to circumvent US law. He gave them unlimited spying access to US networks. Tells you all you need to know about OpenAI. This is in regard to OpenAI announcing Paul M. Nakasone being hired to bring his world-class cybersecurity expertise on their board of directors. If anyone had any doubts that these systems were at least being built in a nefarious way, I hope this at least puts you over the edge on that conclusion. Speaking of whether humans can detect AI or not, Hackaday has an interesting report on a paper claiming that human brains can tell deepfake voices from real ones. I think it's fascinating that Uncanny Valley is not just visual. It's possible that over time they can train these models to get better at fooling humans' brains, but I almost wonder if there's something to do with the fact that all forms of communication definitely have more to do with just the words that are said and more than the tone. This whole parasocial media matrix reality we are building is just no substitute to warm bodies in a room together, enjoying each other's presence. Speaking of demanding warm bodies in a room, remote work is a highly contested issue. Zero Hedge is reporting that Wells Fargo fires employees over mouse jigglers. These mouse jigglers are tiny USB cheap devices you can buy from Amazon that will just move the mouse every once in a while, because many of these companies, while they allow their companies to work remotely, they do not have any confidence in their staff to actually be able to do any work. So what they will do instead is they will install spyware on the work computers and report metrics on, is the computer asleep? Have they made any changes to documents? All kinds of different things, you name it. People are buying these in droves just to keep the computers awake. Unfortunately, I will tell you, if you are using a device that is provided by your organization, it is highly likely they are collecting more stats than merely just whether your computer is awake or asleep. So if you are only buying the mouse jiggler because you want to keep your computer awake, that may not be quite enough to keep your job, as we have seen here. Thank you for listening to this free preview of CyberFix. Please share and consider becoming a supporter to gain access to the entire broadcast. There are two ways to gain access to the entire show. One, the easiest method is to go to gabe.rocks/substack and purchase a paid subscription. Two, for the cyber rebels among you, go to gabe.rocks/monero and sign up for a subscription over the Fediverse. Links will be available in the description.